My talk will only take 5 minutes. All right, this talk is a little bit of a bait and switch. In our proposal, we promised to look at economic cycles, but we didn't get the data for the last year, and of course we couldn't ignore the Great Recession. So we're focusing on an expansion period only, which provides baseline estimates for the relationship between job status and psychological distress, and also has given us some ideas for hypotheses to test in about a month when the data come in for 2008. I have no conflicts to disclose. So this is a nice picture of the length of post-World War II recessions. And as you see at the bottom, the Great Recession that's now over. Can I see a show of hands if anybody knows somebody who lost a job in the last recession? Do you know anybody who found a job in the last recession? Yeah, a couple. Okay. So this work is partly motivated by some other work we were doing and looking at the devastating effect of depression on sort of economic achievement, and then conversely, we thought maybe the recession would be particularly hard for people with a disabling disorder. This fits into the social determinants of health literature. People have gone long before me in looking at this, even back to the ECA study. Ray Catalano, one of my advisors when I was a postdoc, looked at mental health and substance abuse outcomes, violence, and spillover effects, looking at foster care placements. The issue here is that labor policy in the U.S. typically focuses on employment. Right, and conversely, unemployment. So if we can just get people a job, everything's going to be okay. And the only people we actually have to worry about are people measured as unemployed. There is prior literature suggesting that there's a new concept that really better describes the social costs associated with job instability, and it's been coined underemployment. It's a new idea, and it's the idea that even if you got a job, you might not be okay. And certainly in a newer economy, I'll talk about it in conclusions, that the nature of employment in this 21st century economy is quite different from post-war America, and there might be a lot of distress among employed. So that's foreshadowing. The idea is that we're going to compare people with depression who've been diagnosed with depression, so they have an ICD-9 code 311, compared to people without. And I'll just, again, tell you what I'm not going to do. I can't tell you if bad things like unemployment lead to depression, maybe. There's some indication of concern. Or whether people who have depression, who are limited in functioning at the time they're interviewing, get worse jobs and therefore maybe can't maintain a job. This study cannot distinguish that. So when I first started thinking about this, there's an article right on the Wall Street Journal talking about recession's mental toll and basically describing employee assistance programs having through the roof increases in volumes of call and them needing to really provide more wraparound type services than what they would traditionally provide. So the Medical Expenditure Panel Survey, MEPS, is our data source. We use, as I said, an expansion period in the last longest expansion. So 2004 and 2007, it started in very late 2001, but I'll show you why I didn't have the distress measures I wanted until 2004. These files are public use. They're quite rich. They have a lot of socioeconomic data and healthcare utilization data. So it's something interesting to try to put together. There are survey and sample weights, so estimates can be made to be representative of the U.S. non-institutionalized population. So we focused on anybody 18 or older who had never been retired. So they report, are you retired or have you ever been retired? No. That gave us just over 81,000 respondents, again, to be weighted to national estimates. And I'll tell you in a minute how we did this. So we measured psychological distress using the Kessler 6, also something used in the National Comorbidity Survey. It's non-specific psychological distress. It might be indicative of some future psychopathology, but it's basically you feel terrible. You're asked about, in the past 30 days with a 5-point scale, different attributes of non-specific distress: nervousness, hopelessness, restless or fidgety, sad, everything's an effort, or you feel worthless. For our two populations to compare, we looked for a medical diagnosis of depression using 311 or never 311. And in each year, we used the multiple rounds to determine if someone is employed for the year, unemployed for the year, job gained, or job lost. So there's basically two rounds. We anchor on the round where we have psychological distress, and we define employment status looking back. Three quarters were employed. Again, this was an expansion period. 23% were unemployed by our measures. Again, these 4% experienced job loss, and a very small proportion experienced job gain. And tracking with other national studies, there were about 10% of people with depression diagnosis in the year of observation, so these are prevalence estimates. Here's kind of a fancy picture. On my intro slide, I noted that this paper has just been accepted to psychiatric services in the December issue, so I don't want to wreck any embargoes. This is a different version of our picture. These are kind of jazzy spider graphs. The idea is that on the perimeter are these six measures, the six domains of the Kessler 6, all added up. They add up to the 24-point scale. Higher is worse. So the no depression diagnosis on the left and the depression diagnosis on the right, you can see that when the scores are out, it's worse. And as you see, it's a roughly doubling the relationship between whether you are reporting that you feel worthless for people with no depression compared to depression. The aggregate sum is what you report overall. So you as a person represent, on average, 6 points higher on the Kessler 6 if you have depression compared to if you don't. One thing to note is that the employed line, the blue, if you can tell, is in the inner bar, so you're the best off. You have the least amount of psychological distress if you're employed, whether you're depressed or not. But as you see, the star up above means that every measure on people with depression is statistically significantly higher for compared to people without depression. The other thing to note is that, not surprising, I hope this worked out this way, right? People who are unemployed look the worst. The next worst are people who lost a job. And on some dimensions, it's the smallest end to be sure, some people who found a job look worse than people who lost a job on some of these subscales. So that's just to note. Those are the unadjusted scores. Okay, so for the two groups, I hope it's not surprising that employment status and measures of psychological distress were significant, including people who are gaining or losing a job. You might think everything is going to be great if you gained a job. This looks like there's something to look at there, some more hypotheses to test. Let's see. As I mentioned, on average, people with depression have 6 points higher. That's considered a clinically significant difference from people without depression. And again, as I mentioned, the adjusted models aren't too, they're not making a big deal out of job gainers looking bad, but I think for policy, it's the unadjusted levels that matter, and those are quite high across the board for people with depression. So part of the issue is who bears the cost. That's a common theme in all of these presentations, is the distribution of cost. The 2001 to 2007 expansion is considered one of the weakest post-war expansions in terms of job growth. So it was a housing bubble. A lot of indicators looked good, but not a lot of new jobs were gained. And that's what we had going into the Great Recession. So some of the fundamentals were quite weak. And so here's where I'm trying to use this base case analysis to get ideas for what, where the bones are buried, so to speak, with this next recession. First is that the people who are job gainers look like somebody we need to take a look at. Definitely in MEPS, you can look at the age distribution, you can look at industries, job status codes, occupation codes. Certainly we would expect that young people who are first out of school getting their first new jobs might be bearing the brunt of some of this. Certainly there is some evidence that people who had planned to retire maybe decided they can't afford to do that and they're seeking jobs again. So in the next round, we're definitely going to look at the distribution among ages. As I said, we did not look at a causal relationship. MEPS, while it has multiple rounds and we can use it to create a variable that is job loss or job gain, which sounds has a longitudinal component, this is a cross-sectional panel. So it's not perfect, but it's, I don't know of many other sources that have a combination of health data and economic data together for individuals that can be used for national estimates. The implication is that, as I said, well, probably all of you at some time in your life have seen this life event scale, the stress scale. Did you get a job? Did you get married? Aren't you stressed out? You know, and yet, so someone before me, a long time ago, noted that job gain could be a stressful event. But the Kessler 6 is a measure of distress. Non-specific psychological distress, and it could be an indicator for psychopathology. So I don't, stress has a nonlinear relationship with good things, right? A little bit of stress is good and too much is bad. Distress is not good. So policy implications might be that jobs bills continue services and connecting people to counseling even for a period after they've achieved a job. As I mentioned, labor policy now, if anybody reads the paper, all you see is that number, 10% unemployment. And nobody worries about the people who are employed. But the idea is that in the old century, employment was a social contract and it meant stability. In the new age, there are many short-term contracts, low benefits, you know, the quality of work may be lower in many sectors. And so I think we have to really start measuring the churn and the underemployment, and it can be measured. So that's our, it's not just in the US, it's US and internationally. There's this great divide between certain kinds of jobs, and it really reflects and reinforces disparities in income, education, and healthcare. And so we're really interested in continuing work in this area. Thanks very much. Thank you.